This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
Hello everyone.
大家好.
Selamat datang.
Konnichiwa.
Hola.
안녕하세요.
Assalamualaikum.
And kia ora. Kia ora everyone. Welcome back to Connecting Cultures Features, a show by, for and about the multicultural people of Dunedin and New Zealand. Today we have Jeffrey Ling from Asians in Business. He's one of the founding community members of the Asians in Business New Zealand, a networking group for Asians in Business. We do have a group here in Dunedin, which I am proudly proud of. But I'm really excited to talk to Jeffrey today to hear more about his story and also the ideas that came into creating Asians in Business. Kia ora, Jeffrey.
Hi there.
So you are zooming in from Christchurch, and we just really appreciate having you here to talk more about yourself, but also made you start Asians in Business. But there's actually a lot more to you. So do you want to introduce yourself to the listeners?
Sure. It's my pleasure to be here, first and foremost. So my name is Jeffrey Ling. The whole family migrated from Malaysia to New Zealand back in 1993. So our first port of call was Christchurch. And I've been away in between the time when we arrived and then the time of coming back. So I was away for 12 years in the middle, but I've been back since, and I've been here for another 7 years now. So all in all, I've been in New Zealand for quite some time. And after coming back, I still, my own family, we still chose Precious to call home, to call it home. And my parents and my sister's family, they're still all here. And so we are very deeply ingrained into New Zealand, been here for a very long time. And we have been in Christchurch for, you know, as you can imagine, very long as well. And glad to talk about a lot, anything and everything about our experiences or my experiences in terms of either studying here, working here, doing businesses here. I've been trained to be a lawyer. I did practice law when I first graduated. And then one thing leading to another, my career took me to other areas, you know, business areas in the past, including, you know, the startup space. And then later on doing a bit of my own consulting. And so I kind of know quite a bit, not just on the legal side of things, but also entrepreneurial side of things, like doing business, starting a business, or, you know, the so-called tech startup. How do you start a tech startup or software company? And also that's also within my forte, done quite a bit of that, you know, joined someone else, startups a few times. So being through the process, zero to one, very exhilarating, but also very, very excruciating at the same time. Back in New Zealand, and then I'm working for a company right now as the company lawyer, but at the same time also taking lead in one of their new business units. So in a way, entrepreneurship, if you know what that is. And so for me, for some reason, my life has not been able to escape from either one of these two, either law or entrepreneurship.
There's so much there that we will talk about today, like what it was like for you shifting from law to business, startups. But also when you mentioned that you were away for 12 years, you were in Taiwan. So I do want us to talk about that as well. But before we talk about your journey, let's go back in time and talk about your what it was like for you growing up. You were from Malaysia. Can you tell me about what it was like for you and your family and also growing up there and your family values at that time?
Yeah. As you can imagine, we are born, you know, we are like, I don't know. I think I'm the fourth generation Chinese in Malaysia. So we have, you know, the whole family, you know, through generations, we've been there for so long. We definitely identify with the same values as every other Malaysian back home. You know, that was just the way of life for us. Never thought that we would come across, you know, something such as, you know, migrating to a completely new environment such as New Zealand, not to mention it is so far away from the rest of the world. Never thought we would end up here. But back then, it was, like I said, very traditional. You know, all the Malaysian values you can think of, we're that. Yeah. And it's all about, you know, and obviously back then, we're talking about more than 40 years ago. Malaysia was kind of different, in a different situation. I think we are starting to become an economic, powerhouse in that region, and things are getting to be better in so many ways. And then we, I don't know. I mean, what else can I say? I mean, it's we as traditional as you can get when it comes to, you know, an Asian, you know, a Chinese family in Malaysia. The thought is, but then the thought is, you know, for the children, our parents have wanted us to, you know, get Western education, among many things. And so that's how we end up in New Zealand for a change. But that doesn't stop us from, you know, thinking a lot about what, you know, we can do for Malaysia. Or going back there often for, so that's why I have passion when it comes to, you know, how can I help anyone, you know, who wants to make it work, especially if you're from Malaysia, how can we make this work for you when you come to New Zealand, or the other way around, you know, you're Malaysian or you want to do something in Malaysia, you're not Malaysian, that's okay. You know, if you want to talk about Malaysia, especially when it comes to doing business, that's where we can come in and try to help out. I hope that's enough. You know, I don't want to sound like I'm babbling.
What did your parents do back home before they migrated?
My dad was actually a politician, which I you know, that's something I want to not get too involved in. Because we're not in that environment anymore. But then my mom, she's a school teacher. She works as a school assistant, for quite a long time when she was there in Malaysia. So, you know, somewhat simple enough, you know, family, you know, small family for us, three siblings, a lot of fun time, you know, when it comes to think about it. You know, three siblings, our parents, all the good things we can think of about Malaysia. Yeah.
Did they influence you to do law? Or was there any inspiration to do business or entrepreneurship?
Probably not on the business side of things. It was definitely for being the lawyer part. That was a lot of direct influence from my mom. And then somewhat indirect influence from my dad, from me observing him afar. You know, it's all about how can we, you know, it's all about justice. It's all about how can we do right for the people. We're here to fight for the people. We're here to, you know, to make Malaysia a better place for all of us. And so that got me into thinking that, hey, maybe becoming a lawyer is not such a bad thing. We can help people directly in so many ways. Maybe there was a slight hint of, that intention of getting into politics myself one day, didn't end up, you know, doing that at all. So that was not a move that I regretted, you know, like, oh, not getting into politics. What have I done? Nothing of that nature. But I think that there are so many ways I can still do for Malaysia in terms of helping other Malaysians. And there was definitely influence, but not on the business side. So it was in Taiwan that I started to become more entrepreneurial, because there was a lot more literature there that exposed me to the entrepreneurial world, and especially, you know, literature from the US, Silicon Valley. You know, you can't help getting enticed by what's happening over there. All these, you know, startup companies becoming mega-sized companies, and they exist on our phones, they exist on a computer screen nowadays, you know, permeating every aspect of our lives. you know, whether you like it or not, you know. So when you started noticing that, you just can't really go back, you know, like you can't unnotice it anymore. And so that's when I started to want to learn more about, you know, the business side of things, how to go from 0 to 1 and then from 1 to 100, which requires very different skill sets. And a lot of people don't know about that. So I got to get involved in that, you know, in a very deep way, you know, my own startup, someone else's startups twice, and then hundreds of startups I got to work with through a government funded program, just, you know, teaching them if you can teach entrepreneurship at all, but teaching them how to go from 0 to 1 and then later on 1 to 100. That includes not just finding your co-founder, you know, building a team, building a product, but also eventually, you know, pitching to investors, how to scale globally, you know, who to work with, you know, or the distribution channel that you should have. I've done that in Taiwan. And upon coming back to New Zealand, I've also done that substantially, in a substantial way, just adding a bit, you know, to the experience, which is, you know, after coming back to New Zealand, I've also had the pleasure of working with hundreds of New Zealand startup companies in, quote, quote, teaching them how to, you know, go from 0 to 1 and then 1 to 100. The reason for quote, quote, is because it's not, you know, some people may argue that you can't really teach people how to, you know, how to be an entrepreneur. But I believe that some aspects of it can be taught, but anyway, I'm not gonna, you know, make a serious point about this, if someone decides to argue, because, you know, there's no right and wrong. There's only, like, you know, whether you got the timing right. There's a lot of elements that comes into play. And, yeah, so that's my business side experience in terms of how I got inspired to do in the first place, and then how I got to become better at it in the last, you know, about 10 years or so.
And it's good to know Taiwan is the place where you got that inspiration from, and you were there for 12 years, so that is a big chunk of your life.
Yeah.
I wonder if we can talk about, you know, being from Malaysia and coming to New Zealand and that migration. What was that like for you and your family? What age were you at that time? Did you come, like, were you in high school, primary, university?
Yeah, sure. So I've done 3 years of high school back in Malaysia before the whole family migrated to New Zealand. And so after arriving, I got to do 2 more years of high school. I know the math doesn't stack up, but bear with me. I've only done 2 years of high school here, and then straight to university after that. And so I was at University of Canterbury for that length of time, 7 years in total. And I can explain why 7 years, because I just could not face the real world. And I said to myself, okay, more study may help to some extent, you know, let's delay the inevitable to some, and as much as I can. And so 7 years, 3 degrees in total. And then when I could not study anymore, like, okay, time to, you know, make some serious money. And so I did. And so, so that was that.
And let's go back a bit. How did it feel for you to suddenly move your whole life to New Zealand? Did you understand, you know, that you will be leaving your life behind? And were you okay with that?
Certainly not at the very beginning, because we were not prepared for that. It wasn't like, you know, the parents were telling us, hey, guys, in 6 months' time, we'll be moving to New Zealand. Hey, you know, the clock is it's ticking down. And then eventually, you know, we all prepare, you know, and to go to New Zealand. It wasn't like that. It was very sudden, you know, because our parents did not tell us that they were actually making an application for permanent residency. And once we got it, we didn't have a lot of time to actually pack up and move. And so when we got the news, we didn't even get the chance to finish. I think we didn't get the chance to finish the last few weeks of high school in Malaysia.
Oh, no.
And so that was, as you can imagine, that was not a good feeling when you have to leave all your friends behind. You know, when you started to get to know them and then thinking that, oh, we're going to all graduate together in a graduation ceremony. We're going to have everyone, you know, in the same photo. So again, I didn't get to take that photo. So that was perhaps a small regret in life. But then getting used to New Zealand wasn't that bad, at least not for me, because for some reason when I was in Malaysia, I was very much into a lot of these English programs. I mean, like on TVs, okay, just TVs. When people say TV can be awful, maybe for nowadays, but back in, I don't want to say, 40 years ago, but it was about that time, you know, 35, 40 years ago, TV was good to me in the sense that because of the amount of time spent on TV, you know, especially on all those, you know, Hollywood, you know, movies, dramas, and you know, there weren't a lot of them, but there were enough of them for me to start to make English something familiar to me. You know, I would actually try to learn how they will speak English, you know, and at least when I arrived in New Zealand, I will start to remember, hey, that's not how I remember English was spoken, or that was more or less very similar to how I remember English was spoken on TV. And so assimilating to the lifestyle here wasn't all that, well, at least in terms of assimilating myself into the school life here wasn't all that challenging. But then, you know, because of my upbringing, you know, the cultural differences was still, you know, I didn't really have a cultural shock, so to speak, because the TV has taught me quite a bit about the Western world. And New Zealand wasn't all that different from America in a lot of ways back then. So cultural shock, not really so, but then assimilating into the school life, that was, you know, not too hard. You know, it only took me a few weeks to be able to, you know, to cope with what's going on in the classrooms. But when it comes to like, would I prefer the lifestyle of a typical Kiwi? Probably not, because I wasn't out there drinking on a Friday night. That was like, no, I'm not doing that. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's not like that's the only thing, you know, about being a Kiwi. But there was a lot of other stuff. Like, you know, it took me a while to grow my fondness for pies, for peas, for broccolis, and all the things that are commonly eaten here. You know, how they, you know, the way they dress themselves, you know, the color scheme they always have for their clothing choice. Black, you know, which is like very common back then, wearing sandals to everywhere or wearing nothing, you know, bare feet. That still happens nowadays, which is like, you know, yesterday I just remember seeing another person bare feet, you know, walking about, you know, it's like, you know, not like he doesn't care, which is like, this is only normal. I don't know whether it's normal around New Zealand, but it's very normal here in Christchurch. What else can I tell you? So it took me a while to make friends with the local Kiwis, you know, like classmates. I still, unfortunately, spent a lot of time with Asian classmates. I think it was only natural for you to want to feel like you belong, because back then, 30 to 40 years ago, there were not a lot of Asians, you know, not even, you know, Chinese, you know, or, you know, like, you know, yellow skin, skin colored, you know, people on the street. And unlike nowadays, you go everywhere, you see a lot of people with, you know, who are not white. But back then it wasn't the case. And not to mention Christchurch, it was kind of quiet, compared to where it came from. Christchurch had more population back then than where I came from, but then it was very quiet after 6 p.m. And it's still pretty much the case on most of the weeknights, you know, nowadays, and which is like surprisingly, consistent, throughout this time. And so, but, you know, you got used to it, you know, nowadays. In the back then when I first arrived, I can't believe that after 6 p.m., there were virtually no pedestrians on the street. Obviously in the suburbs, like, where are all the people? And that was kind of like another, I won't say it's a cultural shock, but it's just a very different experience. So I believe this is a lot of the same experience for a lot of those who have been here for a very long time. But hey, ask me any other questions. I'll stop there.
What about your parents? So how did they assimilate and what did they do when they arrived Christchurch?
Oh, life wasn't all that easy for them because the thing about the immigration policy, if I'm allowed to say so, is that when New Zealand decided to open the borders to more immigrants, they were not actually preparing the country for these people to come in and find works, right? They're saying, okay, you're highly educated, you should be able to find a job, and so come on in. And then, so we came, but then for my parents, it was not like they get to take up another, office job, easily, because a lot of employers will say, hey, you're not from around here. How do I know you're qualified to do this job? So you better go to university, get qualified again, which is obviously not something, fathomable for my parents who were already in their, what age were they when they were like in their late 30s, early 40s, it's like there's no way they're going to go back to school to study again. But my dad tried to go to school because that was his intention to at least get, he was once wanting to get a law degree himself. So he did do a 1 year, I think, just 1 year university study. It was not easy for him because English was still something demanding. When it comes to law school, especially. And so, so that he gave out on that, I think maybe because, not because he doesn't want to study anymore, because he needed to find a living, make a living for the family as a whole. So he has to move away for a few years just to do that. He's back in Christchurch now, but back then life was more challenging. My mom has to work odd jobs just to make the ends meet. And so we come from a wealthy family. But we managed to work hard enough so that the three siblings can actually get really good education ourselves. So we all graduated from Canterbury and we all found professional works afterward. But back then, it's not the same for the parents. I think we were not the unique case. A lot of other Malaysian families, Korean families, or any migrant families coming from Asia, I think they all pretty much had the same experience. Those who are wealthier, they may be able to say they're going to start a business selling New Zealand products back home, do a little bit of that. Some of those who were successful became really big companies in New Zealand from doing just that. But they were obviously, they were obviously in the minorities. A lot of families I know have since moved back to Malaysia or wherever they're from, which is unfortunate. I hope that helps. It's just a very different kind of situation back then.
It's really interesting to hear your parents' perspective as well. And I'm glad you did mention about the immigration policies back then because, sometimes the realities of what the policies create isn't fit to the community and what the community needs as well. I wonder if you can talk a bit about what it was like for you being Chinese, Malaysian, being Asian, like as a household, but while living in a neighborhood in Christchurch.
Oh, did that really make a difference? I guess, in the early days when we first arrived, I think there were not a lot of Asians in New Zealand anyway. So we were probably not treated any differently. If we're talking about, the local Kiwi perspective, we treated differently. Not really so. We were just like one of the few Asians they've seen. They were very friendly to us, no doubt about that, because New Zealand has always been friendly to a lot of people, not just Asians. So back then it was also true. And at least in terms of my own personal experience, maybe I am more fortunate and always on the right side of the fence to some extent. And therefore I've actually experienced My experience with the local Kiwis here, they have, you know, shown me courtesy, they show me, you know, given me opportunities to shine. They have been treated me like one of them, which is pretty, I can only say that I'm thankful for that experience. I still remember when I first arrived, I don't know whether this is relevant to the question, but when I first arrived in New Zealand, and then I was here for a year, and then before I had to say, force my mom to say, hey, I need to go back to Malaysia. I need to see my friends. And so after a year being in the country, I went back, I had a chance to go back. And then upon coming back again, I didn't know what to do because I was traveling alone. And so I went to the wrong queue for custom. And then, so I waited a long time until it's time for me to, you know, for them to stamp my passport. And then the office of the official there looked at my passport and said, hey, you're one of us, you don't need to be in this queue. Okay. She said she said it in a very nice way. Basically, she's just trying to say, hey, you're one of us. And so, you should be in a different queue. And that felt very welcoming because that's my first sense that, oh my goodness, I think I am a Kiwi, a proper Kiwi now because of that response and all of that, what that person said. And so I don't know if I would feel any differently being Chinese or maybe if I'm not Chinese. But that experience was very, very unique. And I hope that every other immigrants to the country will also feel the same thing one way or another. I think a lot of New Zealand's local Kiwis will still see that as a fact. You know, you're here in the country, you got the right status, you're one of us, you're no different from the rest of us. I definitely can see that, happening to my kids. You know, my kids don't really feel the difference in terms of when they are mingling with their, forgive me for saying so. I think it's proper to say so with their white friends. with the local Kiwis, they probably will not say in a very sure way that they are a Kiwi. But then they probably would not deny that they are a Kiwi. Okay. It's just a case of, there's always that identity crisis. Like who are you? How do you identify yourself? I don't think that being Chinese will make me any different. It just doesn't matter which culture you come from. There's always going to be that cultural dissimilarities you have to learn to adapt to. Doesn't mean that you have to take them all in. You can adapt, as much as you can, but make it your thing. If you can't say yes to it, you don't have to say yes to it, right? Just be who you are.
And I love,
but obviously without trying to make someone else to do exactly the same thing as you do, because if you come in expecting understanding, you should also make sure that you do understand another culture yourself. Not to mention New Zealand is now very multicultural.
And I love how you get to look at how your children are experiencing their lives here in New Zealand. And it's just a very different perspective to the generation, like your generation, also your parents' generation. So, what a wonderful thing to witness and notice as well. And I love how when you were at the customs and that became a core memory for you. And I think as immigrants, as migrants, we all have all these stories of small moments where a stranger is kind and then suddenly you feel like you belong. And sometimes also vice versa, something happens, then you feel like you don't belong in this country. But it's always good to celebrate all these stories, right? Because everyone has such different experiences. I want us to talk about Taiwan, because you lived there for a big chunk of your life as well. So what was it like, from New Zealand? You have lived in New Zealand for a bit, and then you're used to the lifestyle here, and suddenly you're back in Asia in like a bustling city,
Yeah, it's very different. I did live in Auckland for about 3 years. And so Auckland obviously has more population. But then from there to Taipei. So all that 12 years I lived in Taipei, a city of 2.6 million by itself. But if you count the greater Taipei, because of the commuting population, we're talking about 6.5 or maybe 7 million population by now. All congregated in a very, small area, land area. And that's, all kind of concrete jungles you read in the textbook or online nowadays. So they're there. They have all that at play. Obviously, nothing compared to the likes, in Japan or in Tokyo or in Seoul or in Shanghai. It's very different, and not to mention that transitioning from an old English environment. Yes, we do speak Chinese at home, with my parents. But then outside of that, it's still mostly English environment. But so transitioning from an old English environment suddenly to an old Chinese environment, and because everywhere else you go in Taiwan, you see Chinese, you hear Chinese. It's my mother tongue. So I should not feel awkward about it. But that doesn't mean that there was no, I don't want to say cultural shock, but new cultural experiences in its own right, in their own right, in so many ways after arriving there. Like, wow, I didn't know that as Chinese, this is what you do. There's no right and wrong. It's just the way things are for them. They may say, hey, this is no different to us. This is nothing special to us. We've been doing this for the last many decades. And then for me, it's like, wow, this is very, different experience for me.
Do you have an example of a time when you, learned something new?
It's the way they eat. It's not like, when you're back in Malaysia, it's more flavored. Like in Malaysia, everything's more flavored. Over there, it's less of that. And which is like, I need to actually get used to it, like without the temptation of trying to say, oh, this is not actually good for me, because you need to assimilate. Or you need to get used to it. You need to adapt, because otherwise you're going to constantly complain about this not being the home for you. Why make life difficult for yourself when all it takes is just for you to say, this is actually okay, the way people eat over there. Maybe you can say, hey, that's healthier because they don't use as much MSG.
Yeah, as compared to Malaysian food.
Yeah. Compared to Malaysian food, right? So there's a little dip, probably way too much MSG, too salty, too whatever. But it tastes mighty awesome, right? So I can never say enough about Malaysian food. All the not fusion, but all the different, whether it's Malay food, Chinese food, Indian foods, I love them all. Going to Taiwan, they have their own cuisines. They are basically they basically inherited all these different cuisines from China. So imagine the entire China when the current Taiwanese government, the regime, when they move, they would say they have escaped. When the entire population of the remaining, the remnant government went from China to Taiwan. If anyone is interested in the history, they can go and research the history themselves. I won't go into details, but I will just say that a lot of them, like, I don't know how many, maybe it's, I don't know whether it's 1 million, 2 million, but it was a lot of people all migrated to Taiwan all of a sudden, and they brought everything they are used to this one tiny island. Compared to Singapore, they're big, but compared to New Zealand, Taiwan is only 1/7 the size of New Zealand with 23 million population on it. Okay. So you can imagine it's a tight squeeze to a lot of people. And it's also a very compact experience when it comes to cuisines for the entire China. The way they speak Chinese over there for the, like a lot of them inherit different styles, different format from China. And then throughout the, and throughout times, they got adapted to the local situation. So they may come out differently from where they originally came from. So whether it's food, whether it's language, whether it's, you know, how they do the way of living, the value system they have, you know, it's very different, right? And not to mention that Taiwan is more technologically advanced in many ways, because they have a lot of tech companies over there. You know, back then, you know, if you're still familiar with the likes of Acer, Asus, these are all Taiwanese products and Taiwanese companies, Taiwanese big brands. A lot of laptops nowadays are still produced by Taiwanese companies. I'm not just talking about a few of them. I'm talking about maybe it's still, the numbers still stand, but don't quote me on that. 90% of the laptops nowadays are still produced by Taiwanese companies in China.
Interesting.
Okay. 90%. That was a number I know of when I was still in Taiwan. So obviously it was a while ago, but I don't think that number has changed too much, because at least you're not seeing too many of other Chinese brands, you know, in just a laptop coming out of China. We've seen a lot of phones, you know, mobile phones. Yes. So that's why I won't quote to you the numbers, the percentage for the mobile phones, because I don't know the number. But laptops, by that number, by that percentage, it proves that Taiwanese companies are really good in a lot of tech stuff. But when it comes to cost efficiency and whatnot, there's no way that any country can really compete against China in the long run. And so I'll give China that. I've been to China a few times, been to the factories over there. Massive, just massive, you know, in terms of scale they can achieve. And therefore, the cost efficiency they can secure. You know, there's no way you can compete against China. But you know, Taiwan is still good in a lot of many things they do, semiconductor, precision engineering. There's a lot of stuff. Like even when it comes to Tesla, the latest satellites being, you know, in orbiting our planet, there's a lot of components. They are either design or manufacture or produce by Taiwanese companies. Okay, so when you're in that environment, you can't help but start thinking about, this island is very tech focused. There's a lot of tech companies everywhere. On the street, there was even a joke on the street, if you just tap someone on their shoulder, the chance is that person is an engineer.
Wow.
When you're in New Zealand, that's not really the case, right?
I love how that is the place where you started, learning the opportunities for entrepreneurship and business and startups. I do want us to talk about Asians in Business and how that started. So you are the founding community leader of Asians in Business. I'm so glad to be one of the members of their WhatsApp group here in Dunedin as well. I just want to hear how Asians in Business started for you.
Yeah, sure. It was a simple thought, simple idea back then. The idea still stands nowadays. So basically, it was a case of thinking that, hey, the world is getting really, really small in the sense that, you know, we're not that far away from each other. We're probably just one call, one message away from each other nowadays. For us to be so far, but then again, there are a lot of Asians now in New Zealand, but a lot of us, the entire New Zealand is actually so far away from the rest of the world. And then when I look around, I see a lot of people, you know, all these fresh graduates or people that freshly migrated to New Zealand, they're saying, hey, where can we find jobs? And I'm not saying entrepreneurship is the answer, but I think that there's a lot of untapped opportunities in Asia, or untapped opportunities between what we can do between New Zealand and Asia.
So we all have these underutilized assets, which is our connections to Asia. Why don't we put that to really good use? And I don't mean just, you know, Malaysian doing their own thing, China, you know, Chinese doing their thing, Japanese do their thing, Indians do their things. We're saying that let's all come together, combine our resources, combine our connections, and maybe we can do something about it. If we can, for example, make all the, you know, inbound Asian businesses knowing the existence of our importance, like AIB, Asian in Business, can actually not just, you know, exist as a community, but also be able to provide concrete business assistance to all these folks, all these inbound businesses, then there's a lot that we can do together as opposed to saying, hey, let's wait for another job because I'm sick and tired of waiting for another job. You know, we should create opportunities ourselves. And so because of that, I said to Joe, my partner in crime, and said, let's do this. What do you think? And she said, yes. So as that was 2 years ago, almost 2 years ago when we first started with our first community event. And we've been doing it for the last 2 years and spread it across New Zealand, you know, starting with Auckland. We started in Christchurch, then spread it to Auckland. And then we then had our very first Dunedin event not long ago this year. And then we are hoping to have our new community events in Hamilton and Wellington as well this year.
Wow. So it's definitely spread across the whole New Zealand.
Yes. And what's interesting is that a lot of these folks who reach out to me and say, Jeffrey, I'd like to do this for the community. Can I take part? Which is great because it means that I don't have to convince someone. I am very fortunate to be able to meet all these volunteers, they are business people in their own right, but they are also very passionate about, you know, getting this community together, you know, believing in the same vision, wanting to make sure that this dream can be realized one way or another, it's just a case of, hey, you know, we have number in strength. That's why I believe it. And so the first thing we need to do is actually come together. So for the first few years, I don't see us doing anything such as, oh, we're going to be a lobbyist, or we're going to be, an advocacy for whichever Asian groups. That's not what we're trying to do. We need to come together as a community first. Let's break down barriers. Let's start talking to one another. Let's start to learn from one another, get used to how we do things, because this. I believe that there's a lot of lack of understanding. I don't want to say lack of understanding leading to misunderstandings of what each of us are capable of. And so we need to get that out of the way. And therefore, more opportunities can then naturally flow. And that can only do good for all Asians in New Zealand. In fact, it's not just great for all Asians in New Zealand, but also for the entire New Zealand. You know, because anyone who wants to do business with Asia, if they come through us, you know, it's a case of like, hey, we try to minimize, you know, your pain points, right? You know, you could have done this much easier, much better, much quicker, much cheaper, and so we want to be able to achieve that ultimately. But we're going to try to start as a community first and see how that goes. But make no mistake, we have very clear vision as to what we want to become in the future.
I love, like, as a member, I love the networking opportunity that exists for the Dunedin members here. And there are, you know, catch-ups that we get to meet other Asians in business and talk about, you know, some of the issues or challenges that we might be facing, but also ways around it because everyone just has a big, like a vast amount of knowledge. So it's just like sharing conversations and also sharing knowledge of how to navigate businesses in New Zealand. Have you heard any, wonderful stories from the conversations that has happened because of Asians in business?
Yeah, absolutely. It's very common nowadays for people to ask either for employment opportunities or ask for help with recommending, like getting business helps from other members. We're talking about, I think nearly 200 of us in the Christchurch group or maybe the same number in the Auckland group as well, or not more. And we're using WhatsApp, just to try to get everybody together to start talking about business opportunities. And some would say, a lot of them are just simple requests. Some folks have found jobs, they have found suppliers, they found, contractors, just or they themselves have found, you know, opportunity to do something for others. And so, you know, we need to start with that. But obviously, this is smaller scale. Ultimately, we want there to be, you know, the bigger picture, you know, companies going out there to Asia, companies coming in from Asia, we want to get involved in that as well. Like, we're not trying to replace anybody. We're just trying to, you know, pull the resources together. Any other Asian groups, any other Asian societies, or Chamber of Commerce that can take part as well in what we do. Like I said, we're not trying to be exclusive because the idea is to help you. So feel free to promote your events, business events, or sometimes cultural events, we tend to let it go. Let that one through, but ultimately we want people to make sure that they have the certainty that this is this group is mostly about business. You know, how can we, you know, make it flourish for Asian first and foremost? And then if we can take care of Asians in New Zealand, then we can really take care of New Zealand ultimately.
Mm. And I love the word you use, pooling resources, because it really feels like a group, a community of all these vast experiences where we can just tap in and really ask and get, you know, support and opportunities from. I wonder if you have any advice for any people out there, especially, you know, migrants or ethnic communities in New Zealand who might want to start businesses or startups in New Zealand?
I mean, it's a two-edged sword in the sense that entrepreneurship can be very, very excruciating for those who are not ready for it. So when people ask me, so what do you think? I tend to say, hey, if you have a chance of not doing this, don't do it. But if you're determined, like this is something you have to do or you're going to regret it, if you have that kind of determination, then we can start talking about the next steps. There are many steps that needs to be taken. It's not a case of, hey, I am smart, I have families who can support me, I have money, and therefore, I've got a business degree, and therefore I am destined to success. That's not the case. I've seen, you know, a lot of failures among, you know, those who are so-called smart. You know, don't get me wrong, they are really, really smart. Doesn't stop them from failing. Okay, so, but then what's happening is that at school, they're not taught on how to be a better entrepreneur. All of us are taught how to be a better employees, you know, a better employee. And so that's just the way education is designed to be. I'm not going to say that whether or not that's going to be that's terrible or whatnot, but there's definitely a lack of this entrepreneurial education that needs to take place. Not to mention among Asians, some folks don't even know what the mainstream resources are. And so the community itself, AIB community itself, hopefully will be designed to help out with that to some extent. We're not funded, so therefore we can't actually do like education for everybody. Oh, you want to start a business? Here's the education courses you can go to. We're not there yet. But it is a long process. So people just need to realize that they need to spend time learning about so many things. You know, everything and anything you learn from school, chuck them aside. You need to learn from scratch again. You know, you're creating new knowledge and you have to realize that that's what you're doing. A lot of people thought that we just copy and paste. I'm sorry, that's not as easy as that. Unless you're just trying to sell coffee like everybody else, then maybe it's a copy and paste. But if you're trying to have, but if your idea is so novel, then it's not copy and paste. It's a lot of, you know, it's a slippery slope. It's just a lot of corners you need to look out for. It's just a lot of stuff there. But so the best thing is to actually ask. Don't be afraid to ask questions. So that's why we encourage in the group. Always ask, and anyone ask me anything, if I don't have the answer, I'll say ask in the group because someone is bound to know something. Okay. Or someone is bound to be able to lead, to point you somewhere. So that's the power of the community.
And being open to learn as well, because you know, part of business is being open to fail. So, yes. I love the advice that you have given. Before we wrap up, what's next for you and what's next for Asians in Business?
I'm still going to be working at my job right now. I'm still going to make sure that AIB is going strong. the idea is to get the community to grow to maybe 3,000 members this year somehow, one way or another. So if you are an Asian, if you are very interested, I mean, when I say Asian, I mean, it doesn't have to be about ethnicity. It's not about race. It's not about nationality. It's more about, you know, your Asian heritage. Do you have Asian heritage in you? You could be a white person who have lived in Singapore, Malaysia for the last 10 years, and you have Asianness in you, if you can allow to describe it that way. You are welcome to the community. And so join the community. We have strength in number. And so we want to grow the number first. When we have the number, then we can finally talk about what we can do next. Something more concrete. Because otherwise business opportunities, when they come, we can't grasp them. Then what's the point of trying to, you know, get them to come to us in the first place, right? So let's get more members. We currently have close to 1,500 now. So we just need to pretty much double the size this year, if at all possible.
And those people exist. They just haven't found a group yet.
Yes. Yep. Just look for Asians in New Zealand. Maybe not Google, but you can definitely look for us on LinkedIn, on Facebook, and you'll find us. Asians with an S. In business.
Thank you, Jeffrey, for the chat we have today. And I'm really excited for Asians in Business. And, just being here in Dunedin, there's just so many opportunities for networking. And hopefully we get to see you whenever you're down in Dunedin again in the future.
Yeah, sure. It will be my pleasure to be there.
Thanks for listening to Connecting Cultures Features on RFM.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.